tuned into the GoCast podcast, your one-stop shop for updates, news, tips, and community in the world of Pokemon Go. Thank you for listening.
Hello and welcome to the GoCast podcast. This is another special edition episode. We've got a few of those going on right now, but this one, I assure you, is extra special. I'm your host, Chris, and Kyle is sitting this one out, but I am sitting down to interview Speediest Chief 2. His name is also Will. Which one would you prefer today?
You know what, Chris? I'm going to be calling you Chris today, so if you just want to say Will, that's perfectly fine with me.
All right, let's do it. Okay, Will, so welcome and thanks for agreeing to sit down and chat really quick.
No, I'm really excited. Like we've talked about before the call, it's been a hectic week and I'm glad that we found some time to connect because I'm really excited to talk with you today.
So for those that are listening that might not know who you are or what you're all about, why don't we clear that up for them? So could you kind of give like an elevator pitch, like who is Speediest Chief 2? What are you known for? That sort of stuff.
Well, yeah, Chris, thank you so much for having me on the show. Speediest Chief 2, I know it's a bit of an odd name, but it did come from a fantasy football name generator back in college. And when I started Pokemon Go, it just kind of stuck and I really liked the name and kind of ran with it. But I got my start, I guess you could say, in Sylph, season one. I remember playing PvP and I would have three casual battles with one of my local friends. We play one battle in Great League, one in Ultra League, and then one in Master League, just so we can get our badge wins and all that kind of thing, some rewards, etc. And then the Sylph Arena came out and I thought it was really, really exciting with these limited metas. And I sat the first three cups out because, you know, each month is a new cup. And I sat out the first three because I was a bit nervous. I didn't know anybody because I just moved to Tampa, Florida, and I wasn't sure what to expect. But I finally got the nerve to go to the fourth cup in April, Kingdom Cup. And I was able to meet some friends that to this very day are just big, big parts of my life. They're very important people to me, and that those friendships have just stuck. Then I started to create YouTube videos. And I had a very nice season two in the Sylph Arena as well, where I became the first ever world champion of Pokemon Go PvP, which it was just a magical season and a once in a lifetime experience. And every time I would step up to the next stage, I just couldn't believe it. And I find it's important in those moments to just carry the gratitude with you at each point along the way, because if I lose to House Stark, nobody's going to say, you know, I'm a bad player. It's just a very respectful match. If I lose to so-and-so, you just have to try your best at every scenario. And that's what I was able to do. And after that, I got into Twitch, which is, you know, live streaming Pokemon Go PvP primarily. And that's been a really, really fun journey as well. The community is just so interactive and so supportive. And we have a very unique community in that we raid into each other. We support each other. You see a lot of people in multiple chats throughout the day. So we get to know each other really well. And it's a very, very tightly knit, friendly, welcoming community. And it just kind of fits the overall vibe of PvP. Because at my first tournament, I wasn't sure what to expect. But everybody was so kind and welcoming. They shook hands. Yeah, GG's here. GG's there, no matter win or loss. It was just a very, very positive experience.
Oh man, that's wonderful. I have to ask the question. It sort of begs the question, because Pokemon Go and the community around it, and I'm not a hardcore PvPer, but I'm friends with many of them. And I've dipped my toe. I went to the first regionals. It was in a bar in Chicago. Ours was. It was awesome. But there is nothing quite as supportive as the Pokemon Go community with each other, and the PvP community really just kind of, as is the case with Pokemon Go communities, sort of grassroots themselves into a nice place and respect each other for it, which is wonderful. I bring this up all the time, but I used to podcast in the League of Legends space prior to this. And so this level of positivity is kind of novel to me still and has not worn off. So I've got to ask, did you compete at this level or did you have any vested interest at this level with another video game prior to Pokemon Go? And how does this experience as a professional in this space in comparison to when you did that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I think that what makes Pokemon Go PvP so unique is that it's built off of a very collaborative game. In Pokemon Go, we raid together, we shiny hunt together, we do gym battles together. We have a very, very collaborative environment where everyone goes out and plays Community Day. They gather for events, they trade. It's always like very, you know, give and take in the community. And I think that what makes Pokemon Go PvP so unique is that you still carry over that camaraderie, that shared interest, that kindness, and I guess the word I'm looking for is like cooperative effort. You carry that over into PvP as well. So when you lose, it's not like maybe some of the other games where you kind of just walk away in shame. It's more of like, let's shake hands. Let's talk about the matchups. Let's talk about what we could have done better. It's so constructive and it's very unique in that sense. And I think that when you look at competitive formats, a lot of people get a little bit nervous about maybe if I lose, will they think I'm bad? Will they make fun of me? Will anything like that happen? And I got to tell you, Chris, it just doesn't happen in Pokemon Go PvP, and I haven't experienced anything like it. I guess the best analogy I can draw, I was never a professional gamer, so to speak, before Pokemon Go, but I did play lots and lots of Halo growing up. It was one of my favorite games to play, and the game kind of reminds me in a way of the Pokemon Go kind of development method, because you start off playing the campaign. And I always played a co-op with my dad. We would play through normal, then hard, then veteran, then legendary. And we would just do our best at every level to beat the campaign. And then you go into PvP, you know, player versus player after that. And again, the FPS games are a little bit more intense than PvP in Pokemon Go, but it's still a similar community. Yeah.
That's wild. It's really funny because I also played a lot of Halo with my dad growing up. So that's a wonderful memory. Real quick then, which Halo was your favorite?
Oh, man. I didn't love Halo 2. I think Halo 2 was maybe my least favorite. Halo 1 is just... Oh, I'm sorry. Halo 1 is
Halo 2 is my favorite.
No.
It has everything to do with when it came out and the experience I had with it, and not objectively as a game. Let's just be honest. You know, when we're that age, I think that's true of most of our experiences for sure.
Right. Very rose-colored glasses, right? Depending on the time in our lives. Halo 1 is just so classic. I really do enjoy Halo 3. I think 3 might be my favorite. And the last Halo I played with my dad before I moved to Florida is, I think, Halo Reach was the last one I played.
Nice.
So I'm a little bit behind, but I've been playing some Infinite with my brother as well. We're keeping that tradition going.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. Well, we've scratched the Halo itch, but let's bring it back to Pokemon Go. Thanks for indulging me there. Before we kind of dig into all the PvP stuff, because there's a lot to unpack and a lot of fun upcoming things to talk about. Why don't we talk about where you started with Pokemon? Did you start with Pokemon Go, or did you have a vested interest prior to that, like growing up with the anime cards, what have you?
Yeah. So I'll touch on it briefly because I know I tend to talk in long form here, but I'll say that I started with Pokemon Blue, and I remember going to Walmart and my brother wanted Pokemon Red, so I chose Pokemon Blue. And then ever since, it's just been the first game is always so important, right, in terms of building our relationship with a franchise. And I remember playing on my Game Boy Color with my worm light late at night when I wasn't supposed to, right? I was supposed to be sleeping, that kind of thing. Or my mom would lock my brother and I outside to do yard work, and I break some leaves, and then I go sit under a tree and play my Pokemon Game Boy, right? Definitely Blue, and Blastoise has been my favorite Pokemon from the beginning. And I think that the last version I played was actually Crystal. Crystal was the last main series game I played until Pokemon Go.
Wow. Okay. Awesome. So which one was your favorite then? Or your favorite game that you've done so far? I mean, I assume Pokemon Go would probably be the answer, right? Besides your initial first magical experience with Blue.
Yeah, that's a great question. I feel like a lot of those games just continue to iterate off of the original. So they got slightly better in terms of graphics. The storyline was a little more engaging. I have to go back though to Blue version because I really enjoyed the grinding aspect of the game where you would just go out and fight Rattatas constantly, because I like to be over-leveled so I could beat my opponents, you know, the Rockets, the Garys of the game. I could just beat them pretty easily. So I would spend a lot of time walking in the tall grass.
That's awesome. Awesome. Okay. And then last generic Pokemon question, I swear, but this is the hardest one. Favorite Pokemon?
I kind of go back and forth between Blastoise and Mewtwo, but if you made me pick right now, Chris, I'd have to say Blastoise.
All right, I'm not making you pick right now, but it's good to know that it would be Blastoise. I was going to allow the tie because those are some pretty good contenders, but thank you for clearing it up. Awesome.
Yeah, of course.
Gen 1 all the way. Dedication to that blue branding. I love it. I love it. All right, so let's dig into Pokemon Go PvP. And we've talked about, you know, how wonderful it is, the two of us just now. But what was one of the first things to get you into Pokemon Go PvP? Like, did you watch any competitive play for the main series games? Did you battle your friends in the main series games? Like, what about Go was like, oh yeah, I love this system.
That's a great question. I feel like with Pokemon Go, especially when I first started playing, I was all about getting the highest CP Pokemon. I would transfer things. I would power things up. Of course, I didn't really understand, you know, the internal structure of the stats and things like that. I would just say, oh, this Vaporeon is stronger than this other one, so I'm going to keep it. So when I got into PvP, I had to do a lot of remodeling of my inventory to figure out what I wanted to keep. In terms of how I got started, I think that, again, going back to that first Sylph tournament, using Pokemon that were so cool, like Lucario, Dragonair, also one of my favorites, Bastiodon, in that meta that we played, it was just so much fun to use those and to really feel the thrill of the battle in the moment. You know, you get the Lucario against the Bastiodon, you feel good. You get the Altaria versus the Bastiodon, you feel bad. You know, there's just a whole roller coaster of emotions.
So that's sort of like, you know, it's different every time. You don't really know what to expect, that sort of thing. It does face a bit of criticism for being a little bit two dimensional in comparison to some other competitive games. Do you feel differently than that? Or do you feel like the level of sophistication you have to understand to really get the nuance of its two dimensionality is far more difficult than people give it credit for?
I absolutely think the latter. I think the latter is probably true, because if you look at the game, it's a combination of a turn-based and real-time game. And if anyone has exposure to the trading card game or the main series games, everything is just so strongly turn-based, and there's other elements, things like controlling the terrain, boosting your Pokemon, recovering health, all those kinds of things, which add, you know, a lot of layers to the onion that is competitive Pokemon. But if you look at Pokemon Go, you're kind of strapped into this roller coaster. If you've ever been to like a Six Flags or Busch Gardens, you just kind of have that seat lock you in, and then you are in there for the next 4.5 minutes. And the decisions you make are not so much turn-based. Well, you could say they're turn-based, but a turn is just a single second. So you have 1 or 2 seconds to make a critical choice. And it's just like you're in for the ride once that game starts. And I can understand where people just say, oh, it's just tap, 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 and that kind of thing. But you could look at other games and say, okay, well, not to dig back to Halo, but if you're playing Halo on mouse and key, you could just say, oh, it's just point, click, click, you know, and that's how you play the game.
Right.
But it's so much more than that, as you know.
Right. Absolutely. And I think that's true of most games. I think a lot of people have a tendency to oversimplify things that they feel like maybe they don't quite understand, or they feel like they should understand. So that's maybe where we get some of that sentiment. It's refreshing to hear you sort of posture yourself and your opinion in a way that's like, that could be your opinion. That's cool if you think it's simple, but it's a game here and it's competitive. It's simple doesn't mean that it's not competitive. You know, this kind of begs a question, that kind of a difficult question, I suppose, because we're talking very meta at this point. But as a content creator and competitor, do you feel there is something about Pokemon Go PvP that non-battlers just don't get? Like, where does that divide come from? Because there's definitely people who like PvP and definitely people who don't. And is that just a matter of like, they didn't try it, they don't get it? You know, what do you think?
Yeah, this is another outstanding question. I was thinking about this in the car while we were coming back from the city just a few minutes ago. And I think that where the disconnect comes from is a lot of trainers that play Pokemon Go are essentially competing against themselves, because it is a very In a lot of ways, it is a very kind of solo game. You know, you go out into the world, and even though those Pokemon are available to everyone, you catch them, you spin your stops, you do your evolutions, you track your XP. A lot of the so-called Pokemon Go grinders that really push themselves to achieve those goals are really competing against themselves, or maybe they have a group of peers where they're looking at their stats and they're kind of comparing as time goes. And it's kind of like, it's more of like an indirect, maybe at your own pace competition. And I think that a lot of trainers that play Pokemon Go were attracted to that aspect. They could play the game as much as they want or as little as they want. They could enjoy it. They could build their favorites. They could walk around with their Squirtle. That's their favorite buddy. And it's very unique in that way. And where the disconnect occurs is when you look at PvP, it's more confrontational. It's more conflict directly with other trainers in real time. So you can kind of compare yourself in terms of XP, but goodness, when you queue up and you match against, you know, Chris and Chris has a great lead against you and you're like, oh man, this is so tough. And then it just becomes more of like peer versus peer. And it's much more personal than the previous aspects that we talked about.
Yeah. I guess it kind of just boils down to different people play this game for different reasons, you know, even if they weren't aware of that mindset of how it could appeal, it doesn't necessarily mean that it does, right? So if someone was new to the game and then they asked you to sell them on Pokemon Go PvP, how would you do that?
No, absolutely. I very much have to borrow from another anime, I very much have a Goku kind of mindset when it comes to this. It gives me such a thrill, Chris, to see these trainers that pick up the game 3 or 4 months ago and they're competing today in really high stakes tournaments and they're playing extremely well and they just demonstrate so much talent. It's really exciting for me to see new trainers join the competitive space because to me, it means that it's growing. And everything that I do in terms of content, in terms of the streams, the brand I'm really trying to build is an inclusive, supportive, educational, and collaborative environment. That's my whole objective because I really want more people to play the game. I really want it to succeed from the bottom of my heart. So if I were to sell somebody on PvP, I would just say, you know, Chris, you've been catching these awesome Pokemon for 2 years. You've got a Stunfisk that's just amazing. You've got this Hundo Giratina that's just so powerful. Why don't you take these resources that you've gathered and just test them, right? Because every Pokemon game has come down to battling those rivals, overcoming the next challenge, competing to be the very best. It's literally the motto of Pokemon. We want to be the very best out here. And I feel like it's so critical to take the hard work that you've already put into the game and take it a step further and just compete a little bit, make some friends along the way. It's not like other gaming communities where if you lose, somebody doesn't like you. It's the opposite. If you have the guts to battle somebody, there's a really good chance that you become good friends.
That's awesome. And that's an incredible call to action. I almost regret not saving that for my last question here. And we did touch on this at the beginning of the conversation. We were talking about the overall sort of PvP community and how positive your experience has been and how much you love it for that reason. I just kind of want to get your take on a couple of these different sorts of groups, because there are quite a few grassroots organizations that popped up before GBL was even in the game. We had, you know, Pokemon Go PvP with no ranking built in whatsoever. And we're like, what are you doing? You know, and now we have GBL, which is fantastic. And what's great about it is that it runs concurrently with these other groups. Mm-hmm. So can you speak to, you know, Sylph, Go Stadium? I know GBLA just happened. Like, I would love for you to expand on those groups, how they're different from another and things like that.
Absolutely. So I'll take the reins here with the first org there, Sylph. I feel like, again, bringing structure to a facet of the game that maybe Niantic wasn't sure what direction they wanted to go with it. I think that a lot of grassroots communities have such a passion, Chris, for this game that they are willing to put in the time, volunteer, use their brain power, their effort, blood, sweat, and tears into building unique metas, gathering people there, doing the battles, and just trying to make something of it because we see the potential. And I think that Sylph was probably the first large organization to do that by creating these national, or I guess you could say worldwide metas that kind of organized this game that just, like you said at the beginning, kind of had like a what are you doing kind of component to it. Like, what can we do with this? Where can we take it? I do want to talk about as well Ghost Stadium, because whereas Sylph created these overarching metas that anyone could join and compete in, where the heck do you find these people to compete with? And Ghost Stadium did an incredible job of being one of the early Discord communities that gathered people with these shared interests into doing these battles together. I remember I have very fond memories, and this is going to just speak to the points we've mentioned already as well. I have very fond memories of my first Go Stadium lobby, because you had to build friendship up to Ultra. So you would start your lobby and have your teammates or competitors, so to speak, and then you have to wait those 30, 60 days to build the friendship, and then you could finally battle. And two of them, Rizachi, who's actually still very engaged in the Pokemon Go community. She's a wonderful mod. She lives in the Philippines, and she's just a tremendous supporter of so many streamers in the community and a very, very kind person. And TZ Spanx, who, believe it or not, TZ lives in Mexico, and he's now part of my team on Mazer. And we joined this Ghost Stadium lobby like 2 years ago, and we're still friends. And it's just incredible to see what direction we've gone with a grassroots community like Ghost Stadium. And to the third point, GBLA. GBLA was actually started as a tweet from MathMagic, who's a content creator. His real name is Timmy Ma. And MathMagic asked, we have these awesome leaderboards, but like you said, Chris, what the heck do we do with it? These GBL leaderboards. Sorry, I know I'm jumping topics pretty rapidly, but jumping ahead of time to the GBL leaderboards, you have the top 500 trainers in the world. And MathMagic looked at this and said, number one through number eight, these are the best in the world. What can we do with this? And I asked him if we could take this idea and turn it into a tournament. And we've ever since had, we're on our fourth season now, where we gather those top eight trainers from the GBL leaderboards, put them into a single elimination tournament that reflects that GBL meta, be it Great League, Master League Premier Classic, Ultra League, etc. And those competitors, through the 8 weeks of the season, then go to battle in a grand finals where we have like a GBL champion. You know, this is the big cheese, right? This is the top eight throw down, and then those top eight compete for the title of the best.
That's so wild. It's almost like a Pro Bowl. I'll admit, GBLA flew definitely under the radar for me for a little bit there. This is the first time I've had like a real full conversation about it. And then it's fascinating. I didn't know that that's what it was. I thought it was something completely different based on my minor level of research that I had done. Obviously very familiar with Sylph and Go Stadium, but it is so cool to see other names, you know, doing stuff. And for years, you said this was the fourth year. That's awesome. That's strong. That's stable. We love that. All right. So I did kind of want to shift gears to sort of like what I would call maybe the second half or the second section of this, where there's like a bunch of stuff that's happening. There's a lot of things happening in Pokemon Go right now, and lots of things to get excited about, a lot of things to look forward to. And I would not be doing my job if I didn't get your take and, you know, what your plans, your advice, what sort of things you're going to be looking for with these upcoming events. So the first thing I kind of wanted to ask you about is this off-season update that we got like only a few days ago. So just a quick summary for those listening that might not have listened to the show yet, where we talk about it or haven't read it or whatever the case might be. The off-season update essentially says anybody above rank 20, we're not doing that for the next season. We're not going to have ratings, but, you know, we'll have rotating cups and you can still battle and things like that. And this is all happening as a stopgap so that we can still play and enjoy GBL while they are largely sort of taking it to themselves to fix a litany of issues that they have listed on their known issues page and things like that. So as somebody who is so invested in this competitive scene, right, this is we're talking about them not having basically your scene, right, for about 3 months, or at least this aspect of it. I would love to hear what you think about this move, this decision, pros and cons. Where is your head at with this?
Yeah, that's a really fantastic point. I feel like the competitive drive to reach legend is a big factor in pushing a lot of trainers into really testing themselves against competition. You have some personalities on Twitter who will post almost daily their updates in terms of ELO, where they're at, wins, losses. I mean, they really journal this stuff out, Chris. They really, really care about it a lot, and it determines a lot in terms of their day and their mood and everything like that. People really, really love to reach that legend status and really get hyped about it. Every time you see a legend post, it's got so many likes because people really want to support each other and congratulate each other. But this is an interesting position to be in because without the competitive aspect, a lot of trainers are not going to test themselves in that same way. So I do think that PvP content might have a tough next 3 months or so in terms of, you know, there's so many videos of like this legend team gained me 200 points. And it's kind of like the clickbait version of Pokemon Go PvP, right? Like 15 mm-hmm. and 0 with Haxorus, you know, you better run this team, that kind of stuff. But those kinds of videos might have a tough bit here for a little while. But I think that it's also, we're kind of brushing up against a number of factors here. I think one of them is, again, trying to make the game more inclusive, trying to allow more people to get interested without that pressure, because it is a ton of pressure. People pay for coaching. They stay up late. My girlfriend here, Morita Pokemon, she actually prefers to play her sets around 2 to 3 a.m. because she believes it's easier on the servers because there are fewer people playing and she has, you know, less lag, less bugs. And she will stay up to do that because she really wants to succeed. And as much as she says she isn't competitive, she definitely, definitely is. And I know a lot of trainers are as well, right? But I think that on the flip side of that, the kind of mode that we're shifting into is a more inclusive one where you can battle without that stress. You can come in, you can run funny stuff, you can meme, as we call it, with funny Pokemon that aren't very highly ranked in terms of wins and losses against the meta. And I think that a lot of trainers will really enjoy that. They'll be able to play the Pokemon they want, just like you can farm the Pokemon you want. You can catch a million Murkrows and nobody will laugh. You can battle with Murkrow if you want to in GBL and nobody will think anything of it, which is really nice. I think that's inclusive. But I think that in terms of driving clicks and views on YouTube, it might be a bit challenging. But if it's going to get more people to pick up the game and to join it, I'm all about it. And as well, on the competitive side, there's so many, like you said, inconsistencies with the game. And the main thing, Chris, is that we want an even, fair playing field for every trainer. Mm-hmm. No matter your device, regardless of location, we want you to be able to pick up the game and enjoy it. And if it takes these 3 months to get us to that point and we're set from then on out, I think it would be the biggest solution for the game.
Yeah, I don't think I can disagree with just about anything you just said. You know, if Niantic is going to, and they don't need to tell us for us all to know that this is the case, if they're going to posture GBL into the esports space, what you just described as the main want for an even playing field and competitive integrity, that's the entrance fee, you know, to that space. So absolutely, I'm with you there. I'm pretty positive about this update as well. But I've got to ask you, though, because optics with Niantic is always a big thing, Will. So do you think that this update in particular communicates something to the player base? And if so, what is it? And I'm asking this particularly for you because you interact with the PvP community far further than I do, far more than I do. And so, you know, I'm not entirely sure on if they tend to like Niantic communication, what the opinion is over there. So how do you think this has been coming across to, you know, the competitive PvP space?
I feel like in particular, a lot of trainers are maybe a bit discouraged by the lack of personalized responses in terms of what we see on Twitter. It's a very difficult dynamic because I know that Niantic has a million things on their plate. They built such a wonderful platform and experience for us all. And the reason that we raise so many complaints, and I know it, sometimes it sounds like we're just whining, but it's just because we love this game so much and we are begging to play it. We are begging for it to work. We would give our time, our money, our effort just to see this game grow. And we care that much. We don't complain just to be, you know, Debbie Downers and that kind of thing. We just really come from a place of love. And I think that maybe some trainers especially in the PvP community, maybe some trainers' concerns are not being addressed to the tone and to the quantity that we would really like. And the communication from Niantic is so welcomed, Chris. I'm telling you, when a blog post goes up about PvP, when it goes up about a known issue, we all breathe a collective sigh of relief because we trust the company. We trust Niantic. We're like, okay, you know that the problem exists. If you know it, it means you're working on it and it's going to get better and we feel better about it. I think that if I may like cut in just a little bit here, I think that something that Niantic doesn't really, maybe doesn't really get about the PvP players is that we do it all. We grind, we raid, we play every community day. We buy every community day box for those elite TMs. We play every single event. We trade. We do everything in the game, every single aspect. And it's very easy to quantify one raid pass for a raid. And you can tell from the raid update that they're investing in that aspect because I know that, again, I actually have a business education as well from my university. And I understand like, you know, revenue and expenses. You have to make money in aspects of the game in order to invest. That just makes plain sense. It's not personal. But PvP doesn't have that direct return. You can use a premium pass to do your 5 premium battles, try to get your charge TMs, all that kind of stuff. And that's easily quantifiable. But the players that spend hundreds and hundreds of hours grinding the game, searching for good IVs, going out and hunting and just trying to maximize their PvP roster, I don't know if there's a way to quantify or translate that into how the game works. And I think that long term, PvP is one of the largest value sets for Pokemon Go, and it's not even close. Because if you compare all the raids you have to do to battle in Master League, all the trades you have to do to battle in Ultra League, all of the catches in Great League, there's just a wealth of playtime that is just waiting to be unearthed and kind of cared for in a way that it currently is not.
Yeah, I think you raise a really good point in particular there about how maybe we should all adjust our perspective on this and stop thinking about different players and different camps as much as we have, you know, with so much delineation between them. Because, yeah, I mean, the level, the barrier to entry for Master League to even show up and do anything is hours and hours and hours of gameplay. You're 100% correct on that. So I do have kind of a follow-up question with this, though. If this off-season update is cool, and yes, it could cause some issues for content creators potentially, but limitation breeds creativity and content creators always find a way. Why has this update not happened sooner? Because a lot of the issues that are still on that known issues page have been there longer than a season, several seasons, almost a year plus for some of them. So why now? Do you think it's just because they've decided that they can't fix it while running a competitive season, or, you know, I'd love to hear what your take is on that.
Absolutely. So I think that as well, if you are in the company HQ, maybe you understand a bit more the player activities, the player interactions with the game. Maybe you understand that doing these awesome community day events like we've had are the most important thing. Or maybe from your perspective, adding these new raid bosses or these new events is just a great driver for engagement, activity, new signups. Maybe those are the metrics that you're tracking. But I think that some people within Niantic, if I may, he doesn't know I'm going to call him out here, but Michael Sternaka has been just an incredible, incredible advocate for PvP. I think that he is aligned with the community in the way that he sees the potential for what it could be and what it means to a lot of the players. And I think that individuals like him that really have a passion for it are maybe whispering in the ears there at Niantic and just saying, look, if we just add some more resources here, this could be a really tremendous opportunity for us. And those other individuals within the company maybe are starting to kind of turn the other page and saying, oh my goodness, this could be massive. Our PvP players are some of the most dedicated trainers in the entire game, and we need to start to nourish that community to give them the resources they need. And I think that when we got the announcement about Pokemon Go PvP being added to the Play Pokemon circuit, my goodness, Chris, it just poured gasoline on the fire. And all these trainers we're so fired up. We are so excited because for years, right, we had Sylph, we had Ghost Stadium. Recently, we've had GBLA. For years, people have said, if they just give us an official tournament circuit, this game could flourish. And we are now arriving at that stage. And I think that whereas some trainers maybe have given up waiting, like you said, it's been a year, it's 2 years, 3 years, maybe trainers have kind of given up and walked away. Maybe those trainers come back. Maybe they see that Niantic is investing and it's give and take always with any kind of company corporation with its customers. Maybe they see that they're investing, they're giving back to us and giving us more of what we believe the potential of this game could be.
Absolutely. Polish it, put it on the world stage, and people will see and be like, oh, wow, I had fun with this before. It looks so much more fun. I'm going to go back to that. I think that's the positive mentality that I definitely have. So we were just talking about PvP players do all sorts of things in the game in order to be better PvP players and to benefit their PvP game, quite obviously. So there's a big event coming up this upcoming weekend, and it's GoTour. GoTour Johto. So I'm dying to know, because for me, you know, Cyndaquil is my favorite Pokemon, so I'm going to be catching a lot of Cyndaquil. I love Lugia. Generation 2 is my favorite generation. But the sorts of things that I'm going after and the reasons I'm going after them, I'm assuming, are rather different than yours. So I'd love to hear from you from a PvP-centric perspective. What Pokemon and what features are you really going to be focusing on? Like, what are your goals for GoTour?
Absolutely. So just like we talked about, the investment of time, energy, and resources for PvP is very, very extensive. I know a lot of trainers maybe go and search for the new shinies that are coming out, which is always fun, always tremendous. Like Mantine is going to be for the first time appearing as a shiny at the Johto Tour, and that's really exciting. Donphan as well, one of my personal favorite designs. I'm just going to really, really hunt that shiny really hard. I know a lot of trainers do that. And once they get the shiny, maybe they want their living shiny decks where they have a Phanpion, a Donphan, a Mantyke, and a Mantine. Maybe that's their objective, right? But for PvP, we go to the level where we look at every single league. We look at Great League, Ultra League, Master League. We say, what Pokemon do I need for each? Which one is important? Which one is rare? If I catch something, do I need XL candy for this Pokemon for Ultra? For example, Skarmory is spawning at Johto Tour. And in order to get the most out of Skarmory in the Ultra League, it's got to be at that level 50, which is just so incredibly expensive and resource intensive. So every Skarmory I catch, Chris, I'm going to save that in my bag, do it for trades later to try to rack up on those XL candies. And even beyond that, we look at the stats of the Pokemon. Do you want something with a really high attack so that you can reach a breakpoint with, let's say, Dragon Breath on a Pokemon? Do you want something with really high stamina because that extra HP wins you a matchup that normally you wouldn't win in the Open Great League? We do so much research on all these Pokemon, and we try to categorize them in such a way that we are organized and ready to go. And trust me, I've been working every minute I get on building my, I guess you could say, checklist for the Johto Tour, and I've got a million things I want to catch.
That's awesome. So can you give me a couple of examples? Like, what are you, Will, looking for this weekend?
Yeah, I still remember at Pokemon Go Fest last year, I was in Orlando with some friends, and we got a message from some other locals in Orlando, like, hey man, there's a Hundo Skarmory over here. You got to come get this. It's over by this church, and yada, yada. So we, of course, we were at a gas station getting a snack, and we all jump in the car and we go over there to try to find the Skarmory. So we arrive there, and my Go Plus tries to catch the Skarmory, but it flees. And I was like, oh no, what am I going to do? I missed out on the Hundo. So my number one objective right now is for that Skarmory. I do love the Donphan as well. And I know there's some criticism early on about the XL candy system, but some Pokemon like Phanpy that I catch a lot of, I already have a lot of XLs, so I'm set on that. But yeah, I think that Donphan, believe it or not, level 50 Mantyke in Open Great League is also a really spicy, fun, strong. I see your face. It's Pokemon.
Mantyke?
Mantyke. It's got Icy Wind. I believe it has Aerial Ace, if I'm not mistaken. It's a good little stout Pokemon. It's a good good fish.
That's just ridiculous enough that I might want to pursue that. That's so funny. Okay.
Exactly.
I'm going to have to make my own checklist. Goodness.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the most exciting things going down at the Monterey Johto Tour event this upcoming weekend is a 7-Eleven PvP Invitational. So essentially what we're going to have is this incredible stage that was built by the 7-Eleven crew in partnership with Niantic. I think that Sona Roman has been posting pictures of the construction on Twitter. So you can kind of see how this whole stage is coming together. And it's just a tremendous, tremendous platform. And essentially what's going to happen is the 7-Eleven Pokemon Go PvP esport team is going to take turns one at a time standing on that stage. And then a viewer from the crowd or a fan from the crowd or an attendee can come up and battle that trainer, and their phones are projected on just huge screens on either side so the crowd can watch the battle in real time. It's the 7-Eleven team and also other content creators like HM London for the battles, TZ Spanx as well. All those creators will be there and you'll be able to battle them on a main stage. And this is just like a very stadium-esque feel. I mean, the crowd's going to cheer when you win. They're going to gasp when you no-shield the earthquake. It's just going to be a tremendous, tremendous experience. And the 7-Eleven Invitational is where it's going down.
That's awesome. I mean, that's a step closer to like our dreams as kids, you know? The next thing up is just holograms of the Pokemon in front of us, right? Like, we're almost there. Granted, that's a big step, but we're almost there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
On paper, at least. Right. Very, very cool. So then, am I correct in assuming that you'll be participating? And if so, can you talk about some details around that? Like, can people come and meet you and stuff like that?
Yeah, so I will absolutely be at the Go Tour Monterey event. It's going to be a tremendous weekend. I'm going to be out there catching Pokemon. If you want to say hi or if you want to battle me, we can definitely do that. And I've been saving a lot of Pinecos and Fortresses for trades as well, because I was able to win the Season 2 Sylph World Championship with Fortress on my team, and it kind of became my signature Pokemon in my branding and such. So if you want a Fortress from Speediest Chief, just come and find me. We can do that trade, and you can have that if you're interested in doing that. But otherwise, I'll be at all of the events, and I hope to see you out there.
That's awesome. You should save one of those for me. Bug type is my favorite type.
Oh, I got you, Chris.
We'll meet up sometime. All right. Very, very cool. So I'd like to kind of wrap this excellent interview up here. Thank you so much again for your time and for your expertise and sharing that with us here. I have got a couple of closing questions. And then, of course, we'll leave the listener with all of the ways that they can engage with you and your content before we wrap up for good. So what are you most hopeful for in the future of Pigo PvP? I mean, we've talked about it quite a bit here. I probably could pick one or two things that we've already talked about that you're really excited about. But if you had to choose one thing, and maybe it's something we haven't even talked about, what are you most hopeful for?
I think the most critical thing to me is that I sincerely hope that Niantic and the players recognize the potential opportunity that Pokemon Go still has, because although the game came out in 2016, it still has a tremendous amount of untapped potential, and you can take it so many directions, Chris, but the one direction that I want to mention is that now that Pokemon Go has been added to the Play Pokemon competitive circuit, a lot of people maybe don't really realize what that means in terms of mobile gaming as a whole, because we've played console games, we've played handheld devices like Game Boys and Nintendo DS, but we've never had an AR mobile game make its way into a professional tournament circuit in the way that Pokemon Go has. So when I look at Pokemon Go compared to other games, maybe you play the main series games and you're able to kind of grind out your training on your device at home, on your couch, or maybe in the comfort of your home. Pokemon Go, as cliche as it sounds, you got to get out there. You have to physically go out, track down these Pokemon, get your kilometers to hatch your eggs. This is a much more physical aspect, a new dimension, if you will, of physicality that comes to this gaming environment. And I know Niantic is really pushing the boundaries in terms of AR. They really sincerely believe in the opportunity that AR presents. They're mapping the world actively and doing a tremendous job at it. And I think that Pokemon Go PvP as well just fits into that fold. This could be the first AR PvP game that really gets noticed, and it could pave the way for dozens and hundreds of other AR real world competitive games that come in the future.
If you ever run for office, I want to vote for you. I love the way you phrased that. That was great. I'm ready to fight for the future of Pokemon Go PvP as well. Let's do it.
Huzzah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right. So one thing, I can't let you get away from recording with us without having you set some goals. It's kind of what we do here. So I got to ask, do you have any current goals that you're chasing right now? Or if not, like, what's the next like big thing on the horizon for you that you're looking forward to as far as like you as a content creator are concerned?
Yeah, Chris, I'm going to tell you what, if your listeners are still with us at this point in the podcast, first of all, thank you so much for listening to the GoCast. You definitely need to follow on Twitter, subscribe, download, everything that you can do to support the podcast and the platform. I want to give you an interesting nugget here, Chris, that not a lot of people know about myself. So a lot of people got to know me from Sylph season 2. They said, my goodness, this guy is the world champ. He's really, really talented, et cetera, et cetera. Whenever I started the game, I really came from a point of wanting to grow the community, wanting to provide good resources, giving people the tools they needed to be successful. I always saw myself as kind of like a supporting role to growing a community, making it stronger. That's why I started to make the YouTube videos, just commentating on my battles, talking about what I did right, what I did wrong, so that I could learn with the community and we could grow together. And the competitive accolades, I never thought that was written in the stars for me, so to speak. I never saw myself as someone who was built as a world champion or someone who would get to that stage. And that's why just every step of the way, I just tried to maintain the gratitude, because you really have, when you're in a competitive environment like that, you've got two voices in your head. The first voice says, this is your only chance to do this. This is probably the only opportunity you will ever get. So if you mess this up, you're going to regret it. And the second voice is saying, play as well as you can, do your best. You're here because you've succeeded thus far, and you need to trust yourself, and you need to have faith that if things go wrong, then you will be fine. It's a competitive aspect, but it does not rule everything that happens in your life. So the competitive accolades, that was never my objective. To be honest, whenever I would go to a stream for a tournament, a YouTube video for a tournament, or even a live tournament like Orlando in 2019, and I would watch the shoutcasters commentate on the battles, get the crowd energized, just build the hype and build an experience for everyone else in the room, that's the place I wanted to be. I thought if I could be in the booth, in that seat, kind of translating the energy and helping everyone to enjoy the experience, that would be a dream come true. So I'd have to say that casting big time Pokemon Go events is the number one objective in my mind.
That's quite the shift, but it makes a lot of sense when you really lay it out like that, that really kind of aligns with your original goals, even if you ended up somewhere else, which is also great. But, you know, you never lose that desire for that sort of thing as well. It's cool because some of the greatest casters in sports were previous professionals who were in that sport as well, because who else knows it as well as the people who play it at that level? So I think you got a good chance there, right?
I sure hope so. I mean, if you ever watch the broadcast with Tony Romo and he's calling the plays before they happen, you're like, man, this is really, really an interesting perspective, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. I'm not even a big sports fan, but I have all the respect in the world for the casters. I love listening to them cast. Mm-hmm. Just a wealth of information. And that's true for shoutcasting in Pokemon Go as well. The hype, oh my gosh, it's incredible. Okay, well, I would love for you to leave some ways for people to get in touch with you and, you know, engage with your content and things like that. So where can people find you?
Thank you so much, Chris. If you want more of my content, you can catch my live streams, twitch.tv/speediestchief2. If you want to follow me on YouTube, it's the same handle. You got to leave in all those eyes, Chris, because if you type speediest chef, you get totally different results.
And, oh, weird. Okay.
Weird, right? Who would have thought? And if you go to Twitter, you can find me at chief2speediest. Twitter scrambled my handle, but we're going to run with it.
All right, awesome. And as always, I'll leave links to all of those things in the notes section. So if you're not so confident on spelling, no worries. We've got you covered. All right. Well, Will, thank you so very much for taking the time again and finding time. You've been a busy guy recently, and so have I. So again, like you mentioned at the top, I'm so happy we managed to actually connect and chat about this. And good luck with Johto Tour, man.
Yeah, Chris, I can't say thank you enough. I really appreciate you working with me and lining up this time to talk with you, because it's been a tremendous experience, and you're an awesome guy, and hopefully we can talk more in the future if you ever think there's anything useful I can say. But again, it's been an honor, and yeah, go Cast Rocks.
Likewise, and thank you for the endorsement. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.